Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassami. Okay, so continuing on our teachings around right mindfulness. Just to kind of recap how we're doing this, we're focusing for the whole winter on the four establishments of mindfulness. We started out with the first section on contemplation of the body, and as the kind of final approach with that, started looking at the Anapanasati Sutta, mindfulness of breathing, and have kind of moved into that as a mode for looking at the teachings, because the four tetrads correspond to the four establishments of mindfulness. So we looked at the section on Vedana, feeling tone. And then Lumpa started with recently with the third tetrad, the mind, relating to contemplation of mind from the Satipatthana. So I thought to just maybe read the Satipatthana, just to keep that fresh in our mind about exactly what it says in relation to contemplation of mind. It's a fairly short segment in the Four Establishments of Mindfulness. So, contemplation of mind. And how, bhikkhus, does a bhikkhu abide contemplating mind as mind? Here a bhikkhu understands mind affected by lust as a mind affected by lust, and mind unaffected by lust as mind unaffected by lust. He understands mind affected by hate as mind affected by hate, and mind unaffected by hate as mind unaffected by hate. He understands mind affected by delusion as mind affected by delusion, and mind unaffected by delusion as mind unaffected by delusion. He understands contracted mind as contracted mind, and distracted mind as distracted mind. He understands exalted mind as exalted mind, and unexalted mind as unexalted mind. He understands surpassed mind as surpassed mind and unsurpassed mind as unsurpassed mind. He understands concentrated mind as concentrated mind and unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated mind. He understands liberated mind as liberated mind and unliberated mind as unliberated mind. And then moving into the insight refrain, in this way he abides contemplating mind as mind internally, or he abides contemplating mind as mind externally, or he abides contemplating mind as mind both internally and externally. Or else he abides contemplating in mind its nature of arising, or he abides contemplating in mind its nature of vanishing, or he abides contemplating in mind its nature of both arising and vanishing. Or else mindfulness that there is mind is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness, and he abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind as mind. So that's the full text around contemplation of mind. And I'll pick up now where Lumpa left off with Ajahn Jeff's book. I kind of started reading through the next bit and passed it a little bit. And kind of felt like it just, it was hard to follow, just because Ajahn Jeff, you know, makes a lot of references to steps 9, 10, 11, and 12 and talks about them quickly. And then also there's a fair amount of repetition from some of the other sections. So this isn't exactly straight through exactly as he's written. I'm doing some editing as I go along, so if you want to read the full text, please do so.
Yeah.
We'll see if I do it in a way that's understandable. Lungpa finished with reading that Majjhima Nikaya 111 about Sariputta and his development of many of those attainments. And ultimately, as indicated by the passage from Majjhima Nikaya 111, when concentration has been mastered, it allows you to observe the fabrications at work in right concentration so you can find the escape from them. Anguttara 5.28 provides a useful analogy. Just as if one person were to reflect on another, or a standing person were to reflect on a sitting person, or a sitting person were to reflect on a person lying down. In the same ways, monks, the monk has his theme of reflection well in hand, well attended to, well pondered, well tuned by means of discernment. When you step back from the mind in concentration, without destroying the concentration, you can observe what it is already doing well and what it needs to do to make further progress. The remaining three steps in this tetrad are exercises in consciously making the state of your mind more skillful in response to what you have observed in step 9, step 9 being just experiencing the mind. Step 10, which is gladdening the mind, is concerned primarily with motivating and energizing the mind. Step 11, which is concentrating the mind, with making it more solid and unified. As we noted in the preceding chapter, release in step 12 can cover anything from temporary release from unskillful states through the gradations of release experienced when going from a lower to a higher degree of concentration, all the way to total release from suffering and stress. In some cases, steps 10 through 12, gladdening concentration, release, overlap. For instance, when you gladden the mind by breathing in a way that fosters rapture and pleasure, which is steps 5 and 6, that also has the effect of steadying the mind while at the same time releasing it from sensuality and other unskillful qualities. When you use a subsidiary theme in line with the instructions in Samyutta Nikaya 47.10, which is that one where it's like directing or directed meditation or non-directed meditation, to bring the mind to a better mood, that can have a similar three-way effect. In either cases, steps 10 and 11 balance each other out, gladdening and concentration. Gladdening can pertain to instances where you want to give the mind more energy, concentration to those where you want to calm the energy down. So I thought that was worth reading. I'm going to skip a fairly substantial part of it here. Basically, he makes the point that steps 10, 11, and 12, gladdening, concentration, releasing, overlap a lot. And that many of the contemplations, which we're going to talk about here, that one can do as part of those three steps, have effects in more than one of those things, like something can be used to gladden the mind and release the mind as well, so that there's overlap in some of the techniques for 10, 11, and 12. So he then kind of defines four subsidiary themes that are delineate all of these different approaches to gladdening, concentrating, and releasing, then says, goes into some detail about how each one of them applies to different steps in that tetrad. So actually, I kind of missed something. Just to jump back a second, sorry about that. I wanted to read, there is a section later on in the book that goes into a little more detail about those aspects of mind that I read out from the Satipatthana, mind with passion, mind without passion. And Ajahn Jeff actually has a fairly nice section in there that kind of describes that. So we'll go back to experiencing the mind for a minute and look at his description of those terms that I read out from the Satipatthana. Digha Nikaya 22, which is the Mahasatipatthana, treatment of mind is similar to its treatment of feelings. It simply gives a list of mental states for you to discern when they are present. In this case, however, the states are listed in pairs. With one exception, each pair consists of an unskillful state and its skillful counterpart. As for the exception, a constricted mind and a scattered mind, both members of the pair are unskillful. They're paired because they represent two extremes between which you have to find a middle way to bring the mind to concentration. And then he uses I'll read his use of the words here. He has slightly different words. It's a mind with passion, a mind without passion, with aversion, without aversion, with delusion, without delusion, constricted mind, scattered mind, enlarged mind, unenlarged mind, surpassed mind, unsurpassed mind, concentrated mind, unconcentrated mind, released mind, and unreleased mind. Some of the terms in these pairs need to be defined. Samyutta Nikaya 51.20 identifies a constricted mind as one accompanied by sloth and drowsiness, a scattered mind as one stirred up by pleasing sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile sensations. The term enlarged is used, together with immeasurable unlimited, in the standard description of the awareness generated in the practice of the Brahma-viharas. According to Venerable Anuruddha in Majjhima 127, however, an enlarged mind is not immeasurable. Its range of awareness is larger than the body, but still measurable, ranging in distance from the shade of a tree to the earth bounded by the ocean. A surpassed mind is apparently one that has been surpassed either in your own experience or when compared to the experience of those of whose awakening is unsurpassed. These pairs are not mutually exclusive. An unconcentrated mind, for instance, could be scattered with passion, aversion, and delusion all at once. Concentrated mind would also count as enlarged, and, depending on the context, either surpassed or unsurpassed, released or unreleased. The progression in the list of possible mind states exhibits a feature similar to the progression of the list of feelings. The first three pairs deal with issues pertinent to the mind in all activities. The last five with issues pertinent to the practice of concentration. In getting the mind to settle down, the first issue to keep in mind is to avoid the extremes of sloth and sensuality. Then you remember to enlarge your awareness and to make the effort to surpass any preliminary level of concentration so that you can bring it to the stillness of full concentration and release. The implicit message here, as in the case of feelings, is that you are not simply to watch passively as any of these 16 mind states arise willy-nilly. Instead, you use these pairs of contemplation to keep in mind the issues relevant to bringing the mind to concentration. The point is implicitly supported by the fact that, as with all the exercises and categories in the sutta, the act of keeping these categories in mind is meant to lead to the second stage of practice, where the establishing of mindfulness is developed through cultivating all eight factors of the Noble Path, including right concentration. So that was a little explanation of the Satipatthana segment there that I thought was useful, some of those terms. Any questions so far? Okay, back to the tetrads, the third tetrad. So, again, before doing any more reading, I've kind of picked through the categories that he's pulled out as themes for contemplation to develop these gladdening, concentrating, and release. He's grouped them into a whole series of four different groups, and I'm not quite sure exactly how he got to these four categories, and some of them are make sense within the context of the canon, and others are sort of, I think, his way of understanding it. But I just pulled them out and have got them listed here to read out as themes for contemplation. So he spends a fair amount of time going into some detail around all the meditations, particularly breath meditation, that lead to the jhanas as a way of gladdening, concentrating, and releasing the mind. That meditations leading to jhanas kind of cover the whole gamut of the development of the mind. And we've talked a lot about that already, so I'm not going to go into any detail. He also mentions the contemplation of five elements as fulfilling some of these factors. We've talked about that already. He goes back to quote the passages from the advice to Rahula, which we've read out under the body contemplation, on contemplation of five elements. He includes contemplations on anicca and anatta, impermanence or inconstancy and not self, and then goes to mention that that will be actually further covered in the fourth tetrad as well, but there are themes that one can use to gladden, concentrate, and release the mind. And then asubha is another one of these that can be used for that purpose, which we've already discussed in detail. So the other ones that he brings to mind as reflections within these within this third tetrad that I'll spend a little bit more time on in detail because we haven't talked about them a whole lot are the contemplations around the Brahmaviharas and the six recollections that people are probably familiar with, Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, Sila, Dana, and contemplation of the Devas, those six recollections. Spend a little more time with that. Mindfulness of death is included in that, and we've already talked a fair amount about that. And then one that he doesn't mention that we'll get a little bit of mention later on, I thought, as part of the ten recollections, which are more commentarial, is the contemplation of the peace of Nibbana, Upasamanusati. So, thought I'd spend a little bit of time then talking about the Brahmaviharas, and starting with Ajahn Jeff's comments about that. The Brahmaviharas are exercises in developing attitudes of goodwill, compassion, empathetic joy, and equanimity for all beings without limit. A standard description of these exercises is this. And then he quotes from the Samyutta Nikaya. He has a section of that, and I thought I'd read the whole sutta because it's a great sutta that I found very useful for many reasons other than the reason of it being part of the standard Brahmavihara instructions. It's called the conch blower. It's in Samyutta Nikaya 42, number 8, the section on village headmen. And I think I have enough time to read it through. And yeah. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Nalanda in Pawarika's mango grove. Then Asibandakaputta, the headman, a lay disciple of the Nigantas, approached the Blessed One. The Blessed One then said to him, as he was sitting to one side, "In what way, headman, does Nigantanataputta teach the Dhamma to his disciples?" "Venerable Sir, Nigantanataputta teaches the Dhamma to his disciples thus. Anyone at all who destroys life is bound for a state of misery, bound for hell. Anyone at all who takes what is not given is bound for a state of misery, bound for hell. Anyone at all who engages in sexual misconduct is bound for a state of misery, bound for hell. Anyone at all who speaks falsehood is bound for a state of misery, bound for hell. One is led on to rebirth by the manner in which one usually dwells. It is in such a way, Venerable Sir, that Nigantanataputta teaches the Dhamma to his disciples. If, headman, it were the case that one is led on to rebirth by the manner in which one usually dwells, then according to Nigantanataputta's word, no one at all would be bound for a state of misery, bound for hell. What do you think, headman? In the case of a person who destroys life, if one compares one occasion with another, whether by day or by night, Which is more frequent, the occasions when he is destroying life or those when he is not doing so? In the case of a person who destroys life, Venerable Sir, if one compares one occasion with another, whether by day or by night, the occasions when he is destroying life are infrequent, while those when he is not doing so are frequent. So, headman, if it were the case that one is led on to rebirth by the manner in which one usually dwells, then according to Nigantha Nataputta's word, no one at all would be bound for a state of misery, bound for hell. What do you think, headman, in the case of a person who takes what is not given, who engages in sexual misconduct, who speaks falsehood, etc.? And then he goes through the same formulation and then concludes that, headman, if it were the case that one is led on to rebirth by the manner in which one usually dwells, then according to Nigantha Nataputta's word, no one at all would be bound for a state of misery, bound for hell. Here, headman, some teacher holds such a doctrine and view as this. Anyone at all who destroys life, who takes what is not given, who engages in misconduct, sexual misconduct, who speaks falsehood, is bound for a state of misery, is bound for hell. Then a disciple has full confidence in that teacher. It occurs to him, my teacher holds such a doctrine and view as that. Now I have destroyed life, so I too am bound for a state of misery, bound for hell. Then he acquires such a view. If he does not abandon that assertion and that state of mind, and if he does not relinquish that view, then according to his deserts, he will be, as it were, dropped off in hell. That's kind of a strange translation. There was a note on that. There's an earlier translation that actually made more sense. I think it's, let's see if he has it here. He actually doesn't mention the translation, but it's as if, let me see, I'll read what I remember it used to be. If he does not abandon that assertion and that state of mind, and if he does not relinquish that view, then it is as if he would be dropped off in hell. So basically it's saying that with holding the view that Nigantha Nataputta states, the disciple will actually, be living a self-fulfilling prophecy of being born in a state of misery. It occurs to him, my teacher holds such a doctrine and view as this. Anyone at all who takes what is not given, sexual misconduct, speaks falsehood, is bound for a state of misery, bound for hell. Now I have done such, so I too am bound for a state of misery, bound for hell. Thus he acquires such a view. If he does not abandon that assertion, then he will be, as it were, dropped off in hell. But here, headman, a Tathagata arises in the world, an Arhat, perfectly enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, fortunate knower of the world, unsurpassed leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the enlightened one, the blessed one. In many ways, he criticizes and censures the destruction of life, and he says, abstain from the destruction of life. He criticizes and censures the taking of what is not given, and he says, abstain from taking what is not given. Abstain from sexual misconduct, abstain from false speech. Then a disciple has full confidence in that teacher. He reflects thus, in many ways, the Blessed One criticizes and censures the destruction of life, and he says, abstain from the destruction of life. Now I have destroyed life to such and such an extent. That wasn't proper. That wasn't good. But though I feel regret over it, the evil deed of mine cannot be undone. Having reflected thus, he abandons the destruction of life, and he abstains from the destruction of life in the future. Thus there comes about the abandoning of that evil deed. Thus there comes about the transcending of that evil deed. And then through the other precepts in the same way, abstaining from taking what is not given, sexual misconduct, false speech. There becomes the abandoning of that evil deed, and then there thus comes the transcending of that evil deed. Having abandoned the destruction of life, he abstains from it. Having abandoned the taking of what is not given, he abstains from taking what is not given. Having abandoned sexual misconduct, he abstains from sexual misconduct. Having abandoned false speech, he abstains from false speech. Having abandoned divisive speech, he abstains from divisive speech. Having abandoned harsh speech, he abstains from harsh speech. Having abandoned idle chatter, he abstains from idle chatter. Having abandoned covetousness, he is uncovetous. Having abandoned ill will and hatred, he has a mind without ill will. Having abandoned wrong view, he is one of right view. Then had men, that noble disciple, who is thus devoid of covetousness, devoid of ill will, unconfused, clearly comprehending, ever mindful, dwells, pervading one quarter, with a mind imbued with loving kindness. Likewise, the second, the third, and the fourth quarter. Thus above, below, across, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he dwells pervading the entire world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility, without ill will. Just as a strong conch blower can easily send his signal to the four quarters, so too when the liberation of mind by loving kindness is developed and cultivated in this way, any limited comma that was done does not remain there, does not persist there. And then through with the other Brahma-viharas, with compassion, with altruistic joy, with a mind imbued with equanimity, using the same formula that we're very familiar with. When this was said, Asibandhakaputta, the headman, said to the Blessed One, "Magnificent Venerable Sir, from today let the Blessed One remember me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge for life." So that stock phrase we're all familiar with, we chant it a lot on the Brahma-viharas. It appears in several different contexts through the canon. And I just felt it was really worth reading it, even though it's not totally pertinent to the establishments of mindfulness, just because it was a very useful sutta for me at one time. I think it was about my third year when I was at Chithurst, and I was really experiencing a lot of regret and remorse over some things in my past, and was having a hard time with it, and a very kind monk pointed this sutta out to me, it was very useful to realize that there was actually a very set way that the Buddha described quite clearly about how to kind of acknowledge, bring up, and not hold on to, not, you know, constantly gnash over the past. Because that's what's going to really give you, create a lot of misery and create a lot of suffering. You know, what's done has been done and can't be undone, but what you can do is resolve to go on from there and not repeat the same mistakes. Quite nicely, really work on developing the expanded mind states from the Brahma Viharas as a way of helping to release the mind states that one had been caught up in. So the Brahma Viharas is a very prime way of approaching gladdening the mind especially, but also fulfill some of the aspects of concentration at least temporary release as well. Just two more paragraphs real quick. We're kind of running a little late, but this kind of seals up the Brahma Viharas.
A brief comment. Sure. On the sutta.
I think it's
worth noting that the Buddha is pointing directly to the mind, whereas that in juxtaposition with Nigantanataputta, who's pointing to sheer actions of body and speech, being able to have those results as well. So he's pointing to covetousness.
Right.
Ill will, wrong view, those three,
right,
three aspects of...
Yeah, one of the basic differences with the Jain teachings and the Buddhist teachings is that emphasis on mind intention. Thank you. So these exercises can both gladden and steady the mind. The reference to the resulting state of mind as an awareness release calls attention to the fact that they fall under step 12 as well, releasing the mind. As a set, they free the mind, at least temporarily, from passion, Each attitude can also be used to release the mind from specific unskillful states. Goodwill provides an escape from ill will, compassion from harmfulness, and empathetic joy from resentment. MN 62 states that equanimity frees the mind from passion, and Guttara 613 that it frees the mind from irritation. However, even though the Brahma-viharas are often described as awareness releases, they are never described as discernment releases. This means that on their own, they cannot release the mind from ignorance. They are not a sufficient practice for bringing about total release. A point dramatically made in Majjhima Nikaya 97. There, Venerable Sariputta teaches the Brahma-viharas to a dying Brahmin, Dhananjanin, who upon death is reborn in a Brahma world. Later, when Venerable Sariputta goes to see the Buddha, the latter chastises him for leading Dhananjanin to rebirth in an inferior Brahma world and not further to the noble attainments. A similar point is made by discourses describing the way in which Brahma-vihara practice can give rise to jhanas. The fact that these attitudes can induce strong states of concentration is another way in which they gladden, steady, and release the mind all at once. On their own, as aids in step 12, they can lead to temporary release, but not total release. They need the help of the seven factors of awakening to go further than the jhanas. There's kind of a long discussion about which jhanas, which immeasurable state can lead to, but I'm not going to read that at this point. It gets into a kind of confusing things. So I think I'll leave that there for now. Are there any questions or thoughts? Okay. Annamaya namagataya sadhu karangadamase. Sadhu.